Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, Tommy Coombs is our very special guest. And you know him for his work for many years from the Tommy Coombs Band and tremendous amount of material over the years. And he's backed some of the some of the great names in contemporary Christian, in the contemporary Christian world, and he's one of the great names there. And Reverend Billy Graham was one of them, and I certainly want to hear as much as we can about him. Tommy, welcome.
Thanks, Frank. Good to be with you today.
Same here. Billy Graham. I imagine you got to know the Reverend pretty well. We lost him not too long ago. I mean, it wasn't, relatively speaking, wasn't that long ago. Can you tell me your first impression upon meeting him?
Yeah, I got to know his son first and did a lot of his events. And then he eventually invited us to do about 12 of his father's events. He said, we did do that last one at Flushing Meadows as well. Wow. But, you know, the whole Graham family and Billy, and it was extremely exactly like you'd expect them to be. Humble, thankful. I mean, the first time I ever met him, he's just reaching out his hand, being pushed through a crowd through Secret Service guys, just thanking everybody for helping him put on the event. Mm-hmm. And I've heard stories from many of his closest associates, Cliff Barrows and Bev Shea, and people who watched out for him, that sometimes people would try and have a meeting with him, and they'd open the door and they'd see him on his face praying, and they would close the door and say, give us a couple minutes. Those kinds of things that happen in private tend to be the things I think God watches the most and rewards openly, you know, the stuff you do in private in your prayer closet. So he was definitely that kind of guy.
Well, from somebody that's outside of the of organized religious community, I always thought of Billy Graham in the same category as, you know, let's say, you know, and again, this the same type of celebrity, the same type of status in the world as Muhammad Ali and Jack Nicklaus and, you know, all of these folks. And again, not comparing them personality-wise or their life experiences, but just these are the folks that you would see at the White House constantly there, and regardless of what president was there, like an ambassador to the rest of the world from us here in America. And I always saw Billy Graham as that. And again, I never saw him in person. I certainly seen him on TV and whatever, but I always saw him in that same category as these, you know, great stars, whether it's from the world of sports or acting. He's that, I think, to a lot of people out there. I mean, your reaction to that, I mean, Billy Graham as the celebrity.
Well, he was certainly all of that, probably almost every president since Truman, without exception. I mean, maybe one recently called on him for advice, and especially when there was really big decisions to make. And, you know, we have a Christian background in this country, and that's been passed along from generation to generation, sometimes well and sometimes not so well. But Billy always seemed to be the person you would call, that you would trust to really be a friend, for starters. You know, he really was the ambassador. He was a very gracious person. The way he approached relationships was, you know, friendship based and really interested in them and their families. And then that just the other stuff just came up naturally, the counseling. And I think just people trusted this guy was there truly for them and truly for the heart of God. And that's rare. I mean, and he came up during a time when all these young evangelists in the 40s were having sexual problems, money problems, you know, bad character problems. He literally got Cliff Barrows and I think it was Bev Shea and some of his team. They were in Modesto, and you've probably heard the story. And he got them in a hotel room. He said, I want you guys to go to your own private room and in a half hour, make a list of things that we can do so these things never happen to us. And that's exactly what they did. And that was, they never traveled alone with a woman that wasn't their wife. They never entered a hotel room without somebody checking that out. They avoided, the money was handled by the local crusade staff in the city. They didn't touch that. So Billy said, there's three things that'll take you down. Don't touch the money, don't touch the women, and don't touch the glory. And it's pretty simple, really. But yeah. I mean, when you think about what goes wrong, historically, in the Old and New Testament, those are the things that took them down as well.
No doubt. I'm actually, when you simplify it like that, that's what it comes down to. Let me remind folks of who our guest is. Tommy Coombs is a singer-songwriter, and he's always got a big band, what I consider a very big band, and just a tremendous talent. Thrilled to have him. His music for years has been entertaining folks, and he comes from the contemporary Christian world, but anyone can enjoy what he's put together, and musically and lyrically, just a wonderful performer and everything else. And thrilled to have him. Tommy Coombs, once again, is our very special guest, Frank McKay, here with Tommy. Tommy, let's do a little bit of your history, if you don't mind, and let's start from the beginning. Where were you born? Where were you raised?
I was born in Long Beach, California. My parents met at the end of the war, so I would be in the front end of that baby boomer explosion. And one of the advantages of that, when you stop and think about it, I could go stand in the front row at a skating rink and watch the Beach Boys for $3. I saw The Ventures in front of a music store. I saw Ike and Tina Turner, them, and all these people. And then not to mention all the surf hot rods. So the emerging of the baby boomers, one of the hot spots for sure was Southern California. And so I just grew up with all that kind of music, you know? So, I started playing trumpet in fourth grade, I guess it was a music major at college. Always loved it. To me, practicing wasn't a chore. It was just a joy, you know? And then, of course, the Beatles happened.
Right.
Which I'm pretty sure all your guests would say the same thing. And how many times have you heard that?
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I mean, people like the Everly Brothers had a strong impact on me. I started collecting records in the fourth grade. And as far as a turning point for me, I heard Little Richard's sing the song called Jenny, Jenny, Jenny. It rocked my world so hard. I went, what is this? And that was probably before he was on TV and maybe before Elvis was on Ed Sullivan's show. I've been a little confused about the chronology, but all these things were kind of fighting against, what our parents loved, which, I grew up in a family where everybody listened to Glenn Miller and all that stuff. And I played it as a trumpet player and I loved all that. It was great music, but every generation's got to have a language of their own, and that continues and will continue. And so, this language started to emerge, and I had a conflict with my educational system. They were frowning on modern music. And I just went, wow, there must be something wrong with me. My school system doesn't like what I like, And of course, a lot of great musicians just had to bypass that stuff. That's not where you always learned how to play your instrument or sing or communicate. So, I grew up in Southern California around all that great music. And I'll tell you another thing that happened to me when I was in high school. I've come home, and this is the day where people had a big console stereo system, first stereo stuff. And I'd be so tired before I do my homework, I'd lay on the couch, and somehow I got the Despacito album with Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd.
Oh, boy.
The first time I ever heard Brazilian music, that also rocked my world real hard. But also, Stax Volt, all that great Memphis stuff, and Motown, and, the Philly sound. I always loved the R&B stuff. I mean, who doesn't like Midnight Hour and Wilson Pickett?
Yeah, well, I'm with you on all of that. And again, another reminder, you're hearing the voice of Tommy Coombs and Frank McKay here. Thrilled to have Tommy, singer, songwriter, musician, just a little bit of everything. And he's a pioneer in contemporary Christian music. And let's touch on that. I mean, because so much happened coming out of the 60s, good and bad. I mean, you had movements.
Right.
Everything was a movement. And you know, you almost get lost in the shuffle with the what they called the Jesus movement. But you had the, you know, of course, the hippie movement. You had the drug movement. You had the woman's equality movement. You had the civil rights movement. And so many of these things, the civil rights movement obviously was so important to the country. The woman's movement was so important. So many things happened good, but almost lost in the crowd. Was the Jesus movement, and again, you were part of that, and you were kind of a witness to history. What can you tell us about that? And am I correctly presenting that it was kind of lost in the shuffle to so many people?
Actually, I don't think it was lost, Frank. And I'll tell you why. At least not on the West Coast, and it was more prominent on the West Coast. You're absolutely right when you think all this. Upheaval and discontent and unhappiness. I think what drove a lot of that, you know, the Vietnam War, that was a big one, right? And as we got to the end of the 60s, everybody was just so heavily involved in drugs, all the youth culture. And I don't think we realized that we were that unhappy or, you know, in a lot of pain or loss, however you put it, or confused. I didn't grow up in church. I knew nothing about the Bible, nothing about church. I didn't have any Christian friends. I call it a religious vacuum. I just didn't know anything, and it just wasn't on the radar. So I think there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. You know, we have, 70 million baby boomers, and all of a sudden they're going, there's got to be something more. And there was a real strong spiritual element, you know, and unfortunately we combined it with drugs and things like that. And we were thinking Timothy Leary. I lived in Southern California. I lived right down the street from Timothy Leary. I lived in South Laguna Beach, and he was in the Candy. And this was just so rampant. And, you know, people would travel all over the world. They'd come and make some money in Alaska, and then they'd go over to India. My brother-in-law was one of those. And then they'd come through Laguna Beach. So the church didn't know what to do with that. That was, and actually, those of us who grew up in that, you know, post-war culture, we thought church was the last place you would ever think to find the answer to what your heart seemed to be longing for. I mean, literally, that's, we would say that out loud. It's like, wow, I would never go to church. There's nothing there. And a few times I did try it, I went, I don't get this at all. And to me, they were just completely focused on the wrong things. You had, all of a sudden, 1969 in the Bay Area, you know, he had all that psychedelic music and Janis and, you know, Big Brother and Holding Company and, you know, Quicksilver Messenger Company, all those people, Carlos Santana, all that stuff coming out there. Great, great music. And it seemed to be so unifying. But what happened as it went along is because the drugs and experimental sex and all this crazy stuff, people started to lose their mind. They started getting more disoriented. But eventually in that, people started, you know, reading all the Eastern religion stuff. Remember how the Beatles were bringing all that in as well and making it so well known? Well, the guys in Love Song, which I eventually came to Christ with, we were into all of that stuff. You know, your Urantia book, Paramahansa Yogananda, vegetarianism, all that stuff, right? And the harder we tried, Frank, the worse it got. I mean, things just started falling apart. The three of us got busted for drugs, and, you know, then all of a sudden you're dragging your family through a whole year of embarrassing things. And so you eventually start to reevaluate. And what happened is a girl came in that we'd known in Salt Lake City. We used to play there and open up for Three Dog Night and Grateful Dead and all that kind of stuff. And came back to LA, and our lives were falling apart with these drug busts. And this gal came to visit us that we had known. Her name was Sandy Love, and she brought us a book, brought us a calendar that had scriptures on it. And she didn't say hardly anything, not what you'd expect at all. She just came to check on us because she was concerned about us. And she told us about this little church in Costa Mesa that was filled with a lot of young people like us, and we should go check that out. And that completely changed everything. Mm. It was the first time where I saw real love demonstrated in a way that was really healthy with different kinds of people in the room. I walked into this little church, Frank, and I was just so open. It just wasn't like, hey, well, here's a bunch of older people at a square. It wasn't like that at all. It was only a couple hundred people, and they did the basics of the faith well. And remember, I don't know anything, right?
Yeah.
So I could tell that there was a tremendous amount of love there that like I'd never seen on the street anywhere. And I felt somehow that God was in the room and these people actually knew him. And when the preacher talked, he had this huge smile on his face and he was relaxed, just kind of a normal guy, nothing weird at all. And when they sang, it was like, wow, it's almost like I know the next word. This is so sweet. So we all started coming back. And eventually, 6 weeks later, this band that was playing in bars and clubs called Love Song, who had had one of the guys that had four top 20 records by the time he was 17 or 18, a guy named Chuck Girard, he was the leader of the band. He'd been in the Castells and did, you know, he did the Hondells, you know, Go Little Honda, you know, and he was Gary Usher's top vocal guy. And Brian Wilson used to hang out in his house. So making records was not for it. But we were all on a spiritual search. And it turns out there was hundreds of thousands of young people that were on the same search, but we didn't know what the answer was, but we're knocking on every door. So eventually this just started to explode. And this wasn't just happening in Southern California, but it was a lot in Southern California. And all these young people going like, okay, this is what we've been looking for our whole life, but this is not where we thought we'd find it. And people were no longer doing drugs. They were excited about, well, let's find out more about this love of God. And what does it say in the Bible? Because I've never read it. So, you know, Time Magazine and filmmakers and a bunch of people start showing up all over Southern California, and all of a sudden Jesus was on the cover of Time Magazine about 1971, right? So it became very visual for a while, and then in the summer of 72, we got a call. Our first album came out on the United Arts Records, and anyway, we wound up at this thing called Explode 72. With like 140,000 people in the Cotton Bowl from all over the world.
Wow.
And we went, oh, Kris Kristofferson came with Rita Coolidge and Larry Gatlin, and Johnny Cash played, and Billy Graham spoke. And we went, wow, what is this, you know? So that was our first clue that, oh, this is not just happening in this Southern Cal. So, I mean, that's a long answer to your question.
No, listen. Well done. We got a lot of your history there. Let me just remind folks of who they're listening to. Tommy Coombs is our very special guest, and he's from the Tommy Coombs Band, singer-songwriter, and a pioneer in contemporary Christian music. And he has a team of 12 professional artists, songwriters that make up the Tommy Coombs Band. And I always was fascinated by guys that could run a big band, and that's a big band. I mean, you know, most modern bands, everything from a trio to five people, six people is kind of pushing it. All of a sudden, that's a big band. But this is a big band. This is a serious operation that he's the head of. We got a couple of minutes left with Tommy Coombs, Frank McKay here. Much more importantly, Tommy Coombs. Tommy, let me get a website, a social media site, or someplace where people could follow along with what you're doing. Check out your music, buy your records, buy your music, and really keep track of what's going on with you.
Well, the old 70s band that was quite popular was called Love Song. And so if you go to lovesong.band, you can learn about that. And the Tommy Coombs Band, which is now in its 30th year, is tommycoombsband.com. So we're not real active on social media, but we've done about 12 albums. And if you go to the website, you can learn more about the band and contact people there. The members of the band are just amazing. I got two girls in my band that sang on all the Michael Jackson stuff. One of them toured with Whitney for 7 years. They're all studio musicians and great singers who are friends. And we really pretty much travel around the world to help Franklin Graham. And Franklin runs Samaritan's Purse, which is in 125 countries of the world every day providing relief. And so we've been a lot of places right after the war, sometimes during the war, like Bosnia and things like that, bringing some joy when people stop shooting at each other.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to congratulate you on all of your success. And really, you've put together a wonderful career. And it just seems like you it all flowed together with you from love song to what you've been doing for the last 30 years with the Tommy Coombs Band. Just a tremendous career that this individual put together. Tommy Coombs, once again, has been our very, very special guest. Check out his website. Best way to get in touch with them and really listen to what they're doing. Wonderful. Thrilled to have them. Frank McKay, thanking you, Tommy, for being here and spending a little bit of time with us.
Appreciate what you do, Frank.
Well, same to you. And I want to remind everyone, we appreciate you listening in. Frank McKay signing off. Our very special guest has been Tommy Coombs from the Tommy Coombs Band and Love Song. And go to his website and buy a record, listen to some music, and try to catch him live when you can. And you can follow along with what he's doing on his website. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.